Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Lisa Mullins.
It's Friday and time for our week in review, beginning with continued allegations and consequences of sexual abuse, harassment, and workplace misconduct. Here's Texas Republican Congressman Blake Farenthold announcing that he will not seek re-election.
I allowed a workplace culture to take root in my office that was too permissive and decidedly unprofessional. And I allowed the personal stress of the job to manifest itself in angry outbursts and too often a failure to treat people with the respect that they deserved. That was wrong.
And this week, new details emerged about WBUR host Tom Ashbrook, who's been put on leave following accusations of name-calling, belittling critiques, and unwanted touching. Here's WBUR's Martha Biebinger.
One of the accusers, a former producer who's a woman, says the alleged abuse included an additional element for women. With them, she says, Ashbrook would often end a tirade with an unwanted hug or back rub or neck rub.
And PBS has suspended talk show host Tavis Smiley, or suspended the show Tavis Smiley, amid allegations that the host engaged in inappropriate sexual behavior with subordinates. Tavis Smiley lashed back.
I have never groped, inappropriately exposed myself, or coerced any colleague in the workplace ever in my 30-year career. It is clear that this has gone too far, and I, for one, intend to fight back.
Well, joining us this week is Tiziana Deering, professor and co-director of the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College. She's also a member of WBUR's Executive Advisory Board. Tiziana, it's good to see you.
Thanks.
Also with us is Jennifer Braceras, conservative political analyst, senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum, and former editor-in-chief of NewBostonPost.com. Jennifer, it's great to have you. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I should say that Lisa Mullins is helping us out here today. Thank you, Lisa, by the way, because I want to just fully disclose to everybody that I worked as a producer and director at On Point with Tom Ashbrook, for Tom Ashbrook, for almost 5 years. 11 people have filed a complaint against him. I am not one of those 11 complainants, but in order to avoid even an appearance of the conflict of interest, this portion of the conversation surrounding WBUR and Tom Ashbrook, I'm going to be stepping back from, again, so as to not even give the appearance of a conflict of interest. And Lisa's going to be taking the lead on this part.
So why don't we start off with a text that Tom wrote to WBUR's Martha Biebinger. Martha is covering this story for us. Tom Ashbrook said he is, quote, proud of the many people who he's worked with or who've worked with me, he said, during the past 16 years at WBUR. He mentioned the stress of producing a daily two-hour news show. He's talking about On Point, of course. Quote, in the pressure of a live radio environment, I have at times been a tough and demanding boss. We aspire to put on a top-notch show. Many people have thrived in that environment. A few have not. One of the people we spoke with this week for Morning Edition was David Yamada. He's professor and the founding director of Suffolk University's Law School's new Workplace Institute. And he talked about the legal difference between sexual harassment and workplace bullying.
The behavior that's associated with what we call protected class status, in this case, allegations of sexual harassment, could well be legally actionable under employment discrimination laws. However, what we call sort of generic workplace bullying, yelling and screaming bosses, attempts to undermine someone's reputation or sabotage their work performance, those types of behaviors typically fall between the cracks of current employment laws.
So that's David Yamada. We should say here, these are only allegations. There's an investigation going on right now. Also, we don't know really the details, a lot of the details about what allegedly went on. But I'm asking both of you, Tiziana and Jennifer, how do you see the general degrees of bad behavior here, from sexual harassment to just really bad office culture? Jennifer, why don't you go first?
Well, I think Professor Yamada is right that sexual harassment as a legal term is a very different thing than what we colloquially call sexual harassment. And so a lot of this gets lost in our discussion, because when you colloquially say, you know, oh, sexual harassment, oftentimes people are referring to everything from conduct that occurred in a bar, on the street, in the workplace. It could be between friends, coworkers, fellow college students, right? It's a very, very broad category.
That's the kind of informal description.
Right, which doesn't make it appropriate behavior. But when we talk about illegal sexual harassment, what we are talking about is conduct typically in the workplace, sometimes in educational settings, that is sufficiently severe or pervasive to alter the terms or conditions of employment, right? So if you and I are out at a bar and I make an off-color joke and we're colleagues, that's not going to be enough to rise to the level of an illegal claim of sexual harassment. If I'm your supervisor and I'm constantly making dirty jokes every time you come in, and they're only jokes that are made to a certain class of people, women, gay people, what have you, then that is illegal sexual harassment. So every case is extremely fact-specific. That's why when these cases come to court, they often have to go to trial to parse the details. They're very rarely dismissed on summary judgment because they're so fact-specific.
Wait, they have to go to trial, and we should say you're saying this as a lawyer. They have to go to trial, meaning this ends up becoming a criminal issue or not?
No. I mean, there are civil and criminal cases, but even in a civil case, there are cases dismissed on summary judgment, but it is very difficult to get your case dismissed before and not have it go to the jury because they are so fact-specific, and the jury really needs to parse the specific circumstances and the credibility of the witnesses and the context. Was it employment? Where did the activity occur? Because it's not illegal to act like a jerk. It is illegal to target your employees on the basis of sex or sexuality.
Or colleagues, employees.
Correct.
Or colleagues. Tiziana, what's your thought here in terms of the degrees of bad between sexual harassment and bullying or bad office culture?
Well, I think Jennifer's covered a lot on the legal side, so I'll come at it from a different angle, and I'm going to really zero in on this degrees of bad, because I think in the arc of where we are in this cultural moment in this country, we are moving into a discussion that is about all kinds of bad in the workplace. And I think the case with Tom Ashbrook is an illustration that we're seeing the intersection of these various arcs, kind of the horrible bosses arc and the sexual harassment arc, and whether and how those things intersect. In particular, what I think is important is to understand we want to bring out the best in people. We want to create workplaces.
So where we, meaning who?
We, everyone. We want to create workplaces where people thrive. They bring their best selves to work. They can do their best work. They want to come back the next day. And we've had a section of this conversation that is very specific about sexual harassment in the workplace, and fortunately surfaced the fact that across the nation, we have a serious issue with sexual harassment in the workplace. But now we're also going to start to have a broader conversation about what kind of management and leadership leads to bringing out the best in people and work environments in which people thrive and can stay. That is not a legal question. That is a management culture question.
Right.
And what we're seeing here in this particular case is an intersection of those two things.
I agree with that point. And of course, I am on board with trying to create, you know, positive workplace cultures and all of that. However, what I worry about is the use of very broad terms to label people in the public domain when we don't necessarily have all the facts. And for example, the term sexual misconduct is often the term that is used in the media. That covers everything from an off-color joke to forcible rape. That is a very broad spectrum of conduct. And what I worry about is that when people are accused of sexual misconduct, the public assumes the worst. And where do you go? Where do those accused people go to get their reputations back if it turns out after investigation that, you know, what they did was on the left side of the spectrum?
Didn't constitute that. And that happens a lot, that people get their jobs back because things were not sufficiently proven during an investigation.
But they may never get their reputations back.
That's true across the board with a lot of activity, civil accusations or criminal, right?
And I think that Jennifer is getting to something that I think takes us out of just a WBR context and into the broader context of
this is much bigger.
Yeah, of all of the accusations and the sort of the outpouring of, hey, this has happened to me too, across the board, pendulums swing. And we are certainly seeing a swing in the pendulum towards the ability to raise these issues, share these issues, whether you look at the chef Mario Batali and what he was doing in the kitchens of his restaurants, or you look at, you know, God, throw a dart and hit someone in Congress, and you'll see accusations or complaints. We're going to have to be aware that when any pendulum swings at some point, it overcorrects. And there needs to become a conversation about, in the long term, what are our strategies that are healthy, that bring reconciliation, that allow us to move forward, and that give us a basis to act going forward, in addition to trying to handle what's already happened.
Tatiana, do you think when you say we overcorrect, does that mean that things can boomerang, or is the trajectory toward improvement?
Well, I think what's important is to make sure that the trajectory is toward improvement. You know, I've thought a lot about this over the last couple of weeks, especially as a woman providing this kind of commentary. There's a special obligation to be very clear about what you think is happening and what you think is important. And when we see massive cultural moments of there's been a problem, it is so deep and so broad that it's happening everywhere, and people are coming forward about it everywhere, at some point we begin to need to move out of mechanisms of individual, we got to try this person, we got to go after this person, we got to go after this person, and into processes that are more consistent with truth and reconciliation. We've had a cultural moment where the way people used to think it was okay to behave is completely unacceptable. And how, at a truth and reconciliation level, do we redefine what is acceptable, seek massive forgiveness and peacemaking over what's happened in the past, and move to a positive new basis for being together? And somewhere in this moment, we're going to have to get there.
You both mentioned how much this is a part of the broader culture right now, and we should say that our producers mentioned this is the sixth consecutive week that Radio Boston's Week in Review has had sexual misconduct allegations as one of its main topics. And Meghna, you have some other examples of that, and other people have spoken on it.
Yes, they have. just to acknowledge to everyone again, I do believe in the highest standards of journalism we bring here to WBUR, so that's why I had to take a step back for that portion of the conversation, because I worked with Tom Ashbrook for 5 years and I did not want to give anyone even the appearance of a conflict of interest. But since we have sort of gotten to this broader point of how we legally and culturally navigate through this moment that we're finding, I want to play a little clip here that echoes to something both you, Tiziana, and Jennifer were saying. This is Matt Damon, of all people, on ABC yesterday.
I do believe that there's a spectrum of behavior, right? And there's a difference between patting someone on the butt and rape or child molestation, right? Both of those behaviors need to be confronted and eradicated without question, but they shouldn't be conflated.
So Jennifer, here's my question. I think more people are saying this now, but do we have the mechanisms in place in the workplace or legally to approach these issues with that degree of nuance? Because one thing is, not very many of these cases end up in a legal framework to begin with.
Right. I think we do, in the sense that from a legal perspective, the law has evolved over many decades to draw lines and to be able to parse these situations. But even in cases that don't go to court, employers have great flexibility to discipline, dismiss employees whose behavior is inappropriate but may not rise to the level of you know, actionable legal case. And one of the things I did years and years ago when I was in practice as an attorney was we provided sexual harassment training for our corporate clients to educate managers, to educate employees about acceptable conduct under the law and generally speaking.
Can I just jump in here, though? Because lots of places provide that kind of training. You know, I'm thinking on Beacon Hill, they've been saying that they're gonna reemphasize training. But, you know, a natural pushback to that is, if the training's been in place for so long, why do we still have so many cases? Why people are still coming forward? So the training hasn't really done much good in and of itself.
Well, that's true. But to the point that this is sort of a cultural turning point, I think now people will take that seriously because they see what's happening and they hear the discussions. I also want to say, with respect to Congress and a lot of these other cases and claims, power corrupts. And people who are in positions of power often behave in ways that we wouldn't like. And I think, this has been a dirty little secret on Capitol Hill for a long, long time. I have friends who worked on Capitol Hill. Not a single one of my female friends who worked on Capitol Hill would say this didn't happen to them in some respect. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it affected their workplace. It could have been a member from another office. It could have been a staffer from another office. But every woman I know, Democrat or Republican, who worked on Capitol Hill was at some point inappropriately propositioned by somebody else who worked on the Hill.
Tiziana, what's your thought here?
So two things. First, you know, you talked about training and wait. If the training's been in place, then why are we still here? Because training needs to be combined with transparency. For it to work well, there has to be transparency. And what has been positive, although I really share Jennifer's concern that we can also get to a moment where we destroy people before we know what really happened. And I worry about that always, in not just this case, but in lots of cases, right? But transparency is essential to the training taking hold.
And transparency in what?
Though? Sunlight. What is actually happening inside an organization or an institution? Has there been justice where justice needs to happen? Has there been, what's the word I'm looking for? Justice isn't actually the word. Reconciliation isn't quite the word either, but healing.
The transparency point is difficult. I mean, the Boston Globe is going through this right now where they did a story on accusations that occurred within the Globe, but they're being criticized for not saying, well, who was accused? And the reality is the employer has to have flexibility to deal with the array of issues that come up as they see fit. And I don't believe that the Boston Globe necessarily has an obligation to reveal the names of those people. If the accusers have asked that they keep it quiet, the employer has a right to respect that. Mm. There are lots of variables that we don't know about. I'm just not willing to say at this juncture, without knowing more facts, whether they should come forward. I mean, transparency isn't always.
Yeah, I take your point. And I just want to, this is something I've been thinking about a lot, because I agree. Like, transparency is it's a complicated thing because there are lots of laws. And part of the reasons why sometimes organizations aren't transparent is to protect those who are making the accusation.
Well, there's a difference between public and transparent, too.
Okay.
I actually think that's also important. So there's a difference between naming who was engaged in a harassment suit and saying, we had a claim in our office, here's how we're choosing
versus
to handle it.
Versus transparencies in practice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's
practice
a difference
and organizational
between transparency
practice.
And public.
But what about also the challenge, particularly in this moment, where, again, both of you touched on it earlier, the court of public opinion makes its judgment almost instantaneously. So that happens virtually no matter how these cases have been handled so far.
Right.
For better or for worse. I mean, don't we as members of the public also have some degree of responsibility to say, maybe we should wait until we know all the facts?
Yes. And that's why I try to be very careful in discussing specific cases. I'm happy to discuss the culture, policies, ethics around these things. But with respect to certain people, you know, I'm happy to say Harvey Weinstein is a predator. We know enough now. There are enough facts in the public domain that shouldn't be controversial. Yeah. There are other people that I'm not willing to speak about because I think we need to be prudent and wait until we have the facts. And waiting until we have the facts is not blaming the victim. It is not so-called slut shaming. It is being prudent and being careful.
Yeah. Well, we just got a couple seconds left. Tiziana, you get the last thought on this.
Well,
today.
You know, in social media, there are always the pros and cons, right? It allows people to raise their voices and be heard in a way they never have before, and that can be very positive. But we've seen repeated instances in the last few years of social media also leading to mob justice in ways that are deeply concerning, and we need to deal with the fact that it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. Well, Tiziana Dehring is professor and co-director of the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College and a member of WBR's Executive Advisory Board. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
And Jennifer Becerra, senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum and former editor-in-chief of the New Boston Post and conservative political analyst. It's great to have you, Jennifer. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And let me say thank you to you, Lisa Mullins.
Meghna, for hosting with you. What a pleasure. Thank
for
you.
For stepping in here. Again, Lisa joined us today so that any conversation about Tom Ashbrook and WBR I could step back from so as to avoid any appearance of conflict of interest since I worked with Tom directly for 5 years. And I just want to say again, thank you, Lisa, because we do take seriously our duty to report on everything that happens here at WBUR, to report on ourselves, but to do it in the fairest and most journalistic way possible. So Lisa has helped us do that. Thank you so much. We will be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.